Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is McCartney Green, and we're going to be talking about her upcoming book, Messages from Transcendent Beings. McCartney has had a visitation from what some may call an angel or a heavenly messenger. She is now in contact with this transcendent being daily through her writing. McCartney has a new book coming out soon, as I mentioned, Messages from Transcendent Beings, as told through the memoirs of Grand Master Eric Kino. In the preface of this book, McCartney tells a story of this incredible happening and how it changed her life. For more information, you can visit her website, which is McCartneyGreen.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome McCartney to the show. Good day, McCartney.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. And how about yourself today?
I am doing awesome. Very excited about getting to chat with you today.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to talking about your book as well as your other work, and you have had quite a life that I really want the listeners to learn all about you and what it is you do. So, first of all, I would love for, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, you had this transcendent being come to you, and so let's talk a little bit about that and what it is, you know, when that happened in your life, what was happening in your life, and then, you know, what was there an initial message from that being?
Absolutely. I was 40 years old. I had 7 children. I was married, and everything in my life that could go wrong was going wrong. Even though I had 7 children, I loved them desperately. My marriage with my husband was falling apart. We were financially destitute, so we had all that stress and worry. And then I was assaulted in a Wendy's parking lot, Wendy's Hamburgers. And after that, I did the unthinkable. I just felt like I couldn't handle everything, and I tried to take my own life. And I don't mean to make a joke about that, but thank goodness I was too dumb to know what the medications I was taking were, because one counteracted the other.
But, that's one time it's good to fail, isn't it?
Yes, right, exactly. After that, it wasn't very long after that at all that I woke up one morning. Now I had gone back to just living my regular life, but I woke up one morning. And there was a man standing at the foot of my bed. And I know normally when someone would wake up and see a man in their bedroom that they might scream or feel very much afraid. But there was something about him that I just had a knowing, if we can call it that, that this was not a regular man, that this was someone special. I call him an angel, but I hate to use that word because you get this vision, you know, of a person in white robes. But that's not what he was at all. He was a Native American. He was bare from the waist up, and around his waist it looked like he had a blanket of some sort wrapped around his waist, and there was a light glowing all around him, not real bright light, you know, as if he was God or something like that, but there was a light around him, and he smiled at me very, very kindly. And I knew that I was safe. I had no fear whatsoever. And I know that I was awake because I kept blinking really hard to make sure I really was seeing what I was seeing. And he spoke to me. And I know we had words that I can't remember. But the ones I do remember is he told me, excuse me, he told told me to write. And I had never written anything before in my life. I mean, maybe a letter, that was it.
But
I said, I was very irreverent. I said, write what? You know? And he smiled very kindly at me, and he said, write love, write your life, begin immediately. And I did begin to write. The strange thing that I did, though, was I sort of pushed this incident aside, almost as if it was inconsequential. It didn't make any difference.
Mm-hmm.
That was almost like I was saying, well, that was strange, you know, but let's move on. Of course, I did have my own survival and my children's survival on my mind at the time, but I still took his counsel and I began to write. Now, I didn't know what to write or how to write, so I just began by writing a journal. He said, write your life. And so I began writing a journal, but, you know, as I just said, things were not working out very well for me at that time, and it was a pretty depressing little story in that journal. So I thought, well, I'll just change a little something here and a little something there and make it happier. And the next thing I know, I was writing pure fiction, and I was having a blast. I loved it. I couldn't believe how much I loved it. I couldn't stop writing. As a matter of fact, I wrote so much, the first book that I wrote that actually became Dandelions Never Die, Book One, the first time was 1,500 pages.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It was a lot. It just flowed. The words just flowed, and I couldn't stop.
Yeah. Now, do you think that that the fact that you were in such a challenged state right at that time that this happened, that may have been a kind of allowed you to be open to having that messenger come to you?
Well, I definitely think that could be part of it. I was really sad, even though, like I say, I had seven children, and I had to go about the business of life every day when you have children. And and so though I was sad, I was still putting one foot in front of another. What I really believe is that this was something that was planned before I ever came to Earth. I feel like this meeting with this being, whether he be my guardian angel or as I believe him to be one of my eternal family members, I believe that it was planned before I ever came to Earth. And I just recently gave a speech that actually I put up on Facebook called Stumbling Down the Correct Path, and I talk about the fact that I believe this angel and I had a pact that if I didn't figure things out by the time I was 40 years old, he'd come down here and knock me upside the head.
Yeah. I think there's a little bit of that, you know, knocking up upside the head happening, you know. But, you know, I guess, and I agree with you. Many times I think we, you know, we kind of set ourselves up for, you know, certain experiences, you know, and then with free will going along and on our journey, that, you know, some of the choices that we make sometimes take us off that path that we had planned. And every now and then there's an adjustment needed, and sometimes it comes in like yours, you know, in the form of a visitation. For some people, it's maybe a traumatic event, you know, or something to be able to shake people up a little bit to kind of reexamine the path that they're on.
Right, a catalyst of some kind, you know, whether it be an appearance or, like you said, some sort of traumatic event or anything, there's usually a catalyst of some kind that helps us get back on that path.
Yeah, very much. So now, you hadn't written a thing, and then you now are writing, and you basically choose the fiction aspect. So let's talk just a little bit about that, and then we'll go into the transcendent, the messages from transcendent beings. Exactly what, talk about dandelions. What was that book about? And because that was your first, correct?
Yes, it was. Dandelions Never Die was actually a title given to me by my my first husband, the one that I was having, you know, our marriage was falling apart, but he actually gave me that title. And I wrote a character based on the being that I had seen, a wise, very handsome being, you know, and I added in things that all women would love. He was big, he was strong, he was kind, you know, he would never push her around, he would protect her, you know, all the things that make girls go, ah, you know. Yes. And I wrote that, and, you know, I had read a lot of romance novels, and I loved them because they always end happily. And I know some people chalk them up as being not even real books or not even real fiction or, you know, not even worth reading. But I love the fact that in most all romance novels, they end happily, and the woman in them always usually finds her path or her way, figures out who she is and what she's supposed to do in life. And I love that about them. And I'm the kind that I don't like to be held in suspense too long to, you know, thinking something terrible is going to happen. If I'm reading a romance novel and something bad is going wrong, I know that it's all going to work out in the end, and that makes me feel much better. So I wrote, you know, what I thought every woman wanted to hear and what I love to hear, and I wrote this wonderful character, and I based it on this personage that I saw, and things in that I wrote in that first book became synchronistic. I mean, even when it came to his name, that it just sort of came to me. It just came out of the blue to me. And for example, I made the two characters there, Eric and Shelley, were the first two characters in that fiction series, and shortly, well, about a year after I had written that book, The Crow came out, which was with Brandon Lee, Bruce Lee's son. And I'd always loved Bruce Lee. Matter of fact, I'd always been into the martial arts, and so, and when Brandon Lee came out with The Crow, the two characters in that movie were Eric and Shelley, and that to me, well, at the time, I thought, oh no, this is terrible. They've got the same names as the characters in my book. Someone will think I copied it. But now I see all those synchronicities. They're a roadmap to let me know that you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and you're on the right track. So that was really fun. That was really, really fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, and for people who are aspiring writers out there, you know, there's a couple of really good points that you came up with. First of all, you know, one of the things important to remember is that, you know, you indicate that you love romance novels, so you found yourself writing something that you normally love. So, you know, for aspiring writers out there, you know, that's number one. You know, write the kind of book that you would read, you know. And then it also seems that, you know, in this particular case that the idea of you love martial arts, you had a martial arts character. So it's really writing about what you know. Even though it's fiction, you draw from your life experience. And that's, I think, also it adds credibility to what you're writing, but it also makes it easier to be able to write it.
Yes, it does. It makes it easy, and it makes you have fun, and it makes you love what you're doing. And you, of course, you write what you know. And now some of the bad things that happened in there were also things that I know, because as you know, you probably don't know, Dandelions Never Die begins with a rape scene. And I had been sexually assaulted, and so I wanted people to feel what I felt, you know, and so I wrote it in, which made it very hard to get published.
That's another story. But, you know, also part of that, don't you think that was very cathartic for yourself as well, putting it down and writing it and getting it out there? Yeah.
Absolutely. And as a matter of fact, it was because I studied or the book was a study on rape and what happens in a woman's psyche when that happens. One of the very first reader comments I ever got is one that I put on my website and have kept there because she touched my heart so much. A girl from Texas, who I have to say who I didn't know, was not related to me in any way. She wrote to me and said, she said, McCartney, I've just finished reading Dandelions Never Die, and I think you are an angel sent to heal people with your words. And that really, I thought, oh, you know, just for a minute, that little thought, because I'm a very slow learner, that little thought came in my mind. I'm supposed to be doing this. This is the road I'm supposed to be walking down. And so I did go on to write the rest of the series with the thought in mind that I'm going to put little enlightening, awakening messages inside all these books, and then regular people who never thought about, when we say awakening, you know what I'm talking about, and I know what I'm talking about.
Right.
Probably your listeners know what we're talking about. But a lot of people have no idea what I'm talking about. And I thought maybe just the general masses, just general people will pick up these books and read them, and they will start to awaken because they're reading these little messages inside the book, sort of, you know, almost like a little can't even think of the word.
Kind of a,
and I'm a writer.
A subliminal kind of message, kind of under the radar. Oh, by the way, look at that. Oh, I got a message here. Well, you know, and that is, you know, and to me, you know, that's one of the things, you know, as a writer that that is really one of the best things about it is that the ability to affect someone's life. I mean, you know, it's good to entertain. And, you know, and I love good entertainment. And like you say, with romance novels or that Lifetime movie, you know, by the end of the show, you know, everything's going to work out fine, you know. But also, you know, with that, it's there are people whose lives are, you know, mirror many times, you know, what it is that you're writing about. And that people are able to see a bit of themselves in the challenge or the struggle, and then see the character, you know, survive and thrive as a result of going through that, then it has that seed of inspiration that people can draw from and then, you know, realize that it could happen to them if they did blank, blank, blank.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So now, okay, so from Dandelions, you've gone now. I mean, that was the romance aspect, but now you've gotten to do messages from transcendent beings as told through the memoirs of Grandmaster Eric Kino. So Eric Kino is one of the characters in Dandelions, correct?
Yes, the main character throughout.
The main character.
He starts out as the main hero and then ends up as the grandfather being, you know, the wise man who everyone turns to.
Okay. So now, how did this departure from romance into messages from transcendent beings, how did that, the seed of inspiration for that happen? And how did you go about, putting that book together? Did it flow as easily, or was there a different style or different method that you used for that particular book?
Well, how I began writing it and how it came about me suddenly writing nonfiction, of course it wasn't sudden, because that being that appeared to me in 1994 was 22 years ago, and I wrote those first 8 books fairly fast, and then I went through a process of awakening and struggling and awakening some more and figuring things out and awakening some more and being I remarried and my first husband passed away in 2013, and it devastated us all because we had become best friends, he and I, and of course when you have 7 children together, you sort of can never be apart, you know, you're bound.
Right.
And so
yes,
there definitely is. And he died suddenly of a heart attack, and it just devastated the children, and it devastated me, and it even devastated my husband, because we were all, you know, we all loved each other. And once that happened, I realized that I hadn't been in meditation and prayer and connecting with my higher self and with aligning with source energy. I hadn't been doing it like I know I was supposed to be doing it or like I should be doing it. And I began to do that more once he left this world.
Mm.
So in a way, that was a catalyst for me, but certainly not the reason why he passed away. But
right.
And once I did that, I still struggled for a while. And then in 2015, almost exactly a year ago, one of my sweet readers, fans, whatever you want to call them, I hate to call people fans, but she says she is. she wrote me on Facebook and said, "Are you ever going to write anything about the Kinos again? Please write something." And I, you know, in the last book, by the time it gets to book 8, Grandmaster Kino is in his 60s. And I told her, "Well, if I keep writing about them, I'll either have to kill them off or make them live forever." You know.
Uh-huh.
And she answers and says, "Well, it would be fine with me if they live forever." So I went out.
Mm.
I had been doing this. I had been doing this thing where I have to walk my dogs every day, so I do a walking meditation thing that I do, where as I'm walking the dogs, I try to tune in and to my eternal family,
mm-hmm.
and source energy and God, and so I was doing this walking and meditating, and I just threw the question out there: how in the world or why in the world should I continue writing at all? I mean, why would you send someone to visit me and tell me to write? And absolutely nothing really has come of my books. I haven't sold that many. You know, I'm not a best-selling author. The people who read my books, they're very touched by them, but those are not very many people. And what's the use? You know, I was just throwing it up there and letting go and saying, just what's the purpose? I don't get it. What do you want me to do? They want me to write about this. And finally, I heard something again. Finally, after all those years, it came to me. It was a voice kind of in my head. I could almost hear it, you know, I could hear it because it was like a conversation. And he said, "Write Eric's memoirs as if he was a real person." And I was happy to hear my connection, you know, to know that I was connected
mm-hmm.
again. That made me
right.
feel really happy. And but then I argued. I'm so irreverent. I argued right away again.
Uh-huh.
I can't write his memoirs as if he's a real person, because then people will think that I'm being dishonest, and I love to live in complete honesty, and I don't want to do that.
Right.
I want people to think I'm tricking them, you know. And that's when he said, "This is an allegory. Jesus taught in parables, and you would just let everybody know in the preface that this is an allegory, and you will be able to write all the things that we have to tell you through this story." Well, not all of them, because as I wrote, another book came up that I had to write. So I said, okay. And then immediately my mind, you know, whenever I'm starting on a project, my mind just races immediately to something. I can always form a scene. And I formed a scene in my head as I was walking the dogs of Eric being interviewed by someone, a magazine writer or someone. And they said,
mm-hmm.
"And do you believe in God, Master Kino?" And he said, "Yes, I do." And they would say, "Well, I'm very surprised. How can a man of science believe in God?" And he would answer, "As a man of science, how can I not?" And that was just a scene in my mind that I developed real quickly as I was walking. And next thing I know, I was home. And my husband said, "How was your walk?" And I said, "It was pretty interesting." I'll tell you about it later. And he said he sent me a video on Facebook. And I said, okay, I'll go check it out. And I went and checked out this video, and my jaw just dropped, because the video was, "Science has proved that God exists." And right at about the 33-second mark of that video, the man said almost the exact same thing that I had just said in my make-believe interview in my head. And I knew then that I wasn't just hearing voices in my head, that I hadn't gone crazy, that I really did have this conversation as I was walking, and I really was supposed to write these memoirs. And that's why they got written. How they got written was completely
mm-hmm.
different from the first books. How they got written was I didn't want it to come from me. I wanted it to come from my contact. And so
right.
I would meditate. I would pray and I would meditate and I would wait. And if the words didn't come, if my mind was too, you know, stressed or I couldn't quiet it, then I wouldn't write that day. But most of the time, after I prayed and meditated, it just flowed. The words just flowed, and I wrote. They just came through my fingers, and I wrote. It's not that I wasn't blanked out and was channeling or anything like that, but
okay.
Just the story flowed. It just flowed.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I'm glad you used the word channel, because as I was reading the book, it had that sense about it, you know, that was kind of the information. And it was, you know, I was, first of all, you know, I think that it's perfect. It's wonderful that you're, you know, aware of the integrity and the sense of honesty as to what it is that you're putting out. You want people to know exactly, you know, who it is, what it is, and, you know, not try and frame it as anything other than, you know, what it is, you know. So I, you know, I applaud that. I think that's, you know, that's really important. And, you know, and with that, you know, it's interesting because it's like the energy that you're connecting with, in a way, it's the message that is being delivered, and it isn't really as important as who it is delivering the message as opposed to what the content is. And even the story, I mean, it's a good story. I enjoyed it. You know, it's I just love the framing of it, you know, and all of the martial arts aspect and the Hawaii, you know, basically Eric's story. You know, I really enjoyed that. But again, it's like, you know, the key seemed to be, to me as I was reading it, that, you know, the messages in the context of our daily living, you know, that we live daily, we have all these encounters with other people, relationships, that, you know, in different types of interactions, and the key is to how do we respond to them, and, you know, how that then creates the life that we live. It seemed to me that was like the key element throughout the book.
Yes, I think so. I think that's why it turned out the story, the memoirs of someone's life and all the lessons we can learn from each part of that life. You know, it's easier than just trying to take a book and write a book on one subject where you can't really know how to apply it to your life. But when you're telling a story of someone's life and you're using it as an example, as allegories for how we can learn and evolve, then we can see how to apply these nuggets of wisdom actually in our lives. So
I
love that about it. I did have a friend who had read all of the fiction series, and she just read this book, and
mm-hmm.
she gave me a reader comment. And her comment blew me away, because she said she could actually feel the difference between when I wrote my preface to the point that Eric started speaking in the book. She said she could actually feel a difference between the two, and she definitely knew that it was not just coming from me.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. You know, it's great to be able to get that feedback and recognize that someone can recognize that connection. That's great. Well, we're about halfway through the show already, McCartney, so I want to take just a quick break. And I do want to invite listeners that if you would like to ask McCartney any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions for McCartney you would like for me to ask, feel free to type them in, and we'll do that. And then when we come back, McCartney, I want to talk about the messages. You know, in the book, there's certain messages that are underlined and highlighted, and I'd like to kind of talk a little bit about that structurally and you know why it is that you had that in the book the way it is, okay?
Sure.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there, or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My very special guest is McCartney Green, and we're talking about her upcoming book, Messages from Transcendent Beings. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is McCartneyGreen.com. And I do have a direct link to that in the show page description. Also in the show page description is a link for you to be able to pre-order the book. So you can just click on that link in the show page description, and you can go ahead and do that. Okay, so with that, we're back, McCartney.
Hello.
Hello. Okay. let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the significance you had throughout the book. You have certain lessons or insights that are either underlined or highlighted. Tell listeners a little bit about why you did that, and then how, when you were writing the book, did it come through specifically to emphasize those messages?
It did, exactly. As I had no idea that I was going to do that, when I finally did figure out how to sit down and pray and meditate and start writing, I had no idea what I was going to write. And then as I began to write, and as Eric said certain things, it just came to me. Underline that, italicize that. So
yeah.
I did. So I did, and then I began to realize that we were underlining things that were, I call them nuggets, little nuggets of wisdom. And I was thinking maybe I'm just supposed to be doing that to use at, to post on social media or on a blog, or those little messages. And then it came to me, no, leave them just like they are. And so I left them there. I did put my book out to be proofread by some people, and they came back with me, you have a lot of things underlined and italicized. And I said, yes, I know. But it just, I really did just follow the inspiration as I was writing. Whatever came into my mind, I followed that. And for example, at one point, I felt strongly, go get my youngest son, who happened to be visiting me, and bring him in here and read this to him. So I brought him in and I read him a chapter, and he told me places where he felt like I had not been honest, or not been Eric, let me put it that way, like I had changed into myself from being Eric. And he told me that. And when I went back and read it, I saw it and I figured it out and I changed it. And I realized it wasn't my son telling me that I wasn't inspired. It was the inspiration that told me to go get my son so he can help me to see this with different eyes, So even that, in getting him to help me, was inspired. And that's, that happened through the process.
Oh, that's very interesting. Yeah, I like that. That's, I think You know, as a writer, that is one of the things that that can be sometimes a challenge, you know, especially if you are, you know, in tune with, you know, that muse, you know, wherever that inspiration is coming from, that, you know, you kind of like, they dictate to you, you write it down, and then you go back, and then the logical earth plane mind then tries to, you know, read more into it, change things, you know, and kind of distract. So I could see where that, you know, where you were maybe bringing in Eric, you know, the energy of Eric, you know, and then McCartney kind of popped in, you know, to be able to,
you know,
get it a little bit. Yeah.
And as a writer, it's hard to let someone else read your work and say, "Oh no, you messed up here." And I think, "Well, how can you say I messed up? I'm writing this inspiration."
I'm the writer. What the heck?
But the inspiration was to get his opinion. So that's where it helped me. I tried to be really, really honest in how I was writing it, so that, you know, so it wouldn't be me. I didn't want it to be me.
Exactly.
Through me.
Yeah, I understand.
But not from me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I understand that. So now, you know, one of the things that I kind of want to talk about before we go into a little bit more about, you know, some of the inspirational aspects of it, is that, you know, when you decided to, you know, write about, you know, this heavenly messenger experience, were you at all reticent about writing about that topic and sharing it with, you know, with your listeners, your family, your friends?
Yes and yes and yes. I'm still a little nervous about it. Like I say, I sort of pushed it aside, and I told my family, you know, but they're used to their crazy mom. You know, and no, we really didn't say anything about it. It was when, it's after I had that conversation when I was walking the dogs, and later I was at a birthday party, my granddaughter's birthday party, actually, and there was a young girl there. She's blind, or she can see a little bit, but she's legally blind.
Legally blind.
And,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and we were talking. I have no idea how I got on the subject or why I let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, and told her about this. I think she asked about my writing, and I just blurted it out and told her what had happened and what I was thinking I was getting ready to do is write this book. And she said, and I had told her that I had also had another spiritual experience earlier in my life, 20 years before that, when I was only 20 years old. And that one had to do with another member of my family, and so I don't talk about it publicly. But she said, but both of them I pushed aside as being inconsequential or something to think about another day. I guess I was doing a Scarlett O'Hara. But she told me, no, these things are not inconsequential. Do you understand how many people would love to have happen to them what's happened to you? They would love to know that, you know, to be able to breach the veil and know of a surety that there's something else going on. And they try for it all their lives, and it may never happen for them. And you've been blessed to have this happen, and you can't keep this under the rug any longer. You have to tell the world. You have to help them, you know, and let them know that there really is more than beyond what we can see and feel with our five senses. There's so much more, and you can be a testimony to that, you know. And she was just so adamant that when I left, I thought about what she said for a couple of weeks, and then I made the decision that this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to come out and let everybody know what really happened. And my daughter, one of my daughters, just recently even, you know, it wants me to tread carefully. She's concerned for me, and she wants me to tread carefully. But I've to the point where I have to do what I have to do, and I feel really strongly. I've been blessed to be given this, and maybe I'm, you know, I am back. I remember how happy I was when I finally was contacted again and finally, you know, felt the connection again. I don't want to lose that ever again. And I think if we don't recognize these amazing things that happen in our lives that we just push aside as inconsequential or as just a coincidence, then if we don't recognize those things, then we might lose it. And so I decided, okay, I'm going to be brave, and I'm going to let people know.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, and I think it was fascinating that you were shown that someone who was legally blind was able to show you the value of what it is that you saw and how important it was, you know. And, you know, and it was like, when I read that, it's like, you know, I mean, it's that kind of guidance, inspiration, synchronicity, nudging that, you know, comes from the most unlikely of places that we really, you know, need to pay attention to. We don't have to, but if we do follow that, it really can bring us down a very rewarding path. I think we may have lost McCartney. Those of you in the chat room, can you hear me there? Okay, let me go ahead. Oh, you can. Okay, great. Thanks, Roger. Let me go ahead and see what's happening here with McCartney. Oh, looks like we got her on a different line. Hello, McCartney. Do
Hello?
I have you there?
I don't know what happened, but I got my cell phone out and called you back.
Oh, good. I'm glad you did. I think Eric wanted to give us a little bit of attention. You know, let himself be known. So anyway, great. Glad that we got you back. So one of the things that I'm not sure if you heard, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the aspect in the book messages. There was a where the message was that we are only a victim if we allow ourselves to be. And it seems that, you know, the idea of being a victim, the feeling of being a victim is really an important one that you really want to give attention to empower people to not feel that way. And so do you think that, you know, that your experience in Wendy's, you know, being packed in Wendy's parking lot, do you think that is, it seems like that was a very defining moment for you to embrace what it felt like to be a victim, and then what it does, what it means to transcend that feeling.
It might have been a turning point or a catalyst. In some ways, I had been a victim my entire life. We were raised in poverty. My parents were alcoholics. There were all kinds of, you know, horrible things that I could talk about in my life, but I didn't want to be that person. I don't want to define myself as that. And then I realized, as I looked around, everybody clings to a victimhood of some sort, you know, and blame it on something other than themselves, where they can choose to not be a victim, even if it's just someone who says they label themselves as, let's say, a widow. You know, your husband dies, you're now a widow. And they cling to that. They become a widow, and that's what they are. I'm a widow. And they label themselves, and that's just a tiny bit of victimhood, and that's not really what I'm talking about. I understand the loss of a loved one. But we have to let go of this habit we have of being a victim, you know. I'm part Native American, and I'm part Jewish. My father's family were Russian Jews who escaped and came to America, and I'm not their religion. They didn't teach me anything, but I know that's my heritage.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother is part Native American, and I could talk about the victim that, you know, that they are, you know, that's my heritage,
right.
You know, but that doesn't help me, and it doesn't help anyone to focus on this terrible story of something that happened to us. And the longer that we hold on to victimhood, the worse it is for the entire world. And so it makes people mad. You know, when I first, of course, you haven't read the fiction book, because it's really long and I didn't expect you to, but in that, that's one of the first things that Eric tells Shelley when she has a breakdown and he finds out that she had been assaulted. He tells her that we're only victims if we allow ourselves to be, and she gets so mad at him and lets him know, don't you think that I wouldn't feel this way if I didn't have to, you know, if I could stop feeling it? And he says, of course, I know that you don't want to feel this way. And I'm going to help you sort through all those feelings. And through the course of the entire book, he goes through, she goes through stages. And each one, she gets a little stronger. And each one, she loses a little bit of that victimhood. Until at the end, she is actually raped again at the very end of the book. And this time, she's not a victim. And she doesn't feel violated. She feels strong. And it's just it's really just a click in the mind, just a switch in the mindset to keep people from being victims. And we don't have to be. It's really all in our minds.
Yeah.
I can hold on to one. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I was going to say that you know, I can understand. The idea of being a victim is basically the feeling of something happening to you that was an affront of some sort, and it was something that you couldn't control or you felt powerless, you know, and it seems that it's really important. First of all, you know, I mean, things happen, you know, I mean, you know, according to Eric, though, that things don't just occur. They're brought about by choices was one of the things that he had in the book. But just even in the course of our life experience, you know, we have certain events that happen that we're a part of, you know, and it seems that it's really important to, you know, put those into perspective, to learn what they are, and like you say, you know, not necessarily hold on to them, not allow them to dictate and to run our life, you know, and to make our life more than about a particular event, or even ancestry, you know, and things that may have happened generations ago that, you know, like you say, of the Native American or even the Jewish ancestry, you know, those didn't particularly happen to you. So, you know, some people would say that in our DNA, you know, those kinds of things, you know, exist in our DNA. But I still think that even if that is the case, there was, you know, lessons to be learned from all of those, each of those occurrences, you know. And the ultimate, for me, it seems, is empowerment and an awareness or a consciousness expansion, you know, as a result of going through that.
Right. Absolutely. The letting go and the feeling powerful comes once you've aligned with the source energy, and all you raise up and you realize that all these little things are just little nuggets. I mean, little drops in the bucket. That's more the word I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Drops in the bucket, you know, and they don't really mean anything. I mean, I could sit around and I could envision what happened to me. I could see it over and over in my mind, and I did for a little while, you know. But that wasn't helping me, and I had to let go, you know. And I wanted other women to be able to empower themselves and let go. It doesn't have to define you. You don't have to keep thinking about it.
Yeah, and because just the reliving of it, you know, just brings it back into the consciousness. It makes it, you know, it's real, you know, that, you know, I mean, if you relive a sense of powerlessness, you just, you know, make it even stronger within yourself. You know, anytime that you relive it that way, it's like, oh, I was powerless. Oh, I was powerless. You know, then your body and your essence is going to say, oh, I am powerless. You know, it's like, no. That's not the idea.
That's right.
Yep.
And every time you think about it, you know, I'm very strong about what you see in your mind is real. It's happening. And so you're just making it happen over and over and over. And there's no reason to do that.
exactly. Well, you know, now there were bunches and bunches of insights and, you know, little tidbits of treasure in the book. Now, having written the book, was there any surprises or things that came out as you were writing that maybe surprised you, or that you look back at now and think, man, I wrote that? Or, you know, that kind of thing?
That's a really good question. I did that several times when I called my son in to read to him. I would read him something, and then I stopped and said, wow, I wrote that. You know, it sounded so good, and it sounded so wise, and I'm kind of a down-to-earth, you know, normal kind of person. So those kinds of things did surprise me. Most of the nuggets of wisdom that came through, it came through as such a knowing that it didn't really surprise me, you know, like as I was writing it. It surprised me after the fact when I was reading it, but as I was writing it, it just seemed so logical, and the knowing just came through so that I understood it, and it didn't make any, you know, it wasn't that it didn't make any sense to me. I agreed. It's almost like I said, oh, yeah, that's right, oh, yeah, as I was writing. Does that make sense at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. You know, and I know that, you know, whenever you're, you know, you have that particular connection to that muse, that inspiration, you know, that you kind of are, like, in a sense, outside yourself. And now, were there any of them that kind of stuck out in your mind? You know, anything that maybe really seems to be important? Like, you would say, if someone was to ask you what were, like, the important messages of this particular book, what would you say those are?
I would say that last chapter, the easy spiritual connection, you know, the part where you don't have to sit and chant for hours, or, you know, do mantras or meditate for hours or become ultra religious to get that connection. It's actually really, really easy. And I think the pulling light is one of the most important things that is talked about in this book, in my opinion. It would be different, of course, for everyone who reads it. It'd be something different. But for me, that last chapter where we pull light and learn how to easily connect, just such simple things, you know, wake up in the morning and stretch and breathe and say a prayer and meditate and pull light. It's just, to me, that is the most important, because once you have that spiritual alignment, you're lifted up into a higher vibration, and all of a sudden you see everything from a different perspective. And when you're seeing it from a higher perspective, which is, you know, when I say higher, I mean closer to source energy or to God. I don't know, you know, whatever people want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're close. When you see things from that higher perspective, then nothing touches you as far as sadness and grief and trauma, anything you've gone through, be it the loss of a loved one or a rape or a violent or a murder or just anything you've been through, it all just melts away. And that, I think, is one of the main purposes of this book, is to get everyone to pull light. And I do it. I mean, I just do it sometimes I find myself doing it every few seconds, you know, because it's not a long process. It's not a big, long meditation. I just, I think about it, light just went through my body. And if everybody was mm-hmm. doing that, or even just the portion of people who are awakened would do that, would pull light several times a day, every day, how much light would we be bringing into this world, and what kind of difference could we make? I really feel like that last chapter is the most important, and it will help people to have joy, and it seems so important to me for people to have joy. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be giving a speech at a women's conference, and it's called Joy for No Reason, meaning, you know, it's not because mm-hmm. of your circumstance. It's just because you're feeling joyful. And
yeah.
And so I want to bring people joy, and I want to bring light to the earth. I think it's bringing the light to the earth. If you just listen to the television for a few minutes, you know that we need it. We need it.
Yeah.
And I think it might make a big difference if I could get enough people to do that.
I agree. Yeah. Well, joy is one of my favorite topics. My first book was called Joy Potential. You know, recognizing
right.
the potential of joy. And Well, this has really been a delight, McCartney. I really enjoyed our conversation. Now, I do want to let people know that you're on Facebook and Twitter so they can join you there, correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Please friend me. I love to chat with people.
Great.
Well,
I know that we're connected on both, so I'm really looking forward to following your journey and finding out a little bit more what happens, in your future book. So I really want to thank you for your time. I've enjoyed our chat.
Thank you so much, Robert. Oh, and my book that's up for pre-order right now, The Messages from Transcendent Beings, is up for pre-order. It's at a sale price, so this is the time to get it.
Grab it now. Yep. And again, for those of you listening, there is a link in the show page description to pre-order. So check that out. And also in the show page description is a link to McCartney's webpage, which is McCartneyGreen.com. And everyone, I wanted to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me. And our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.